that Spurgeon is someone who dealt with depression throughout his ministry. As a young man, he was asked to pastor a large church. And as that church, he became the pastor, I believe it was at 19 years old. But early in Spurgeon's ministry, he had a tragedy that happened that would change his life forever. As a Sunday, and I'm going to read the illustration just because it would tell the story better than me. It says, as the Sunday crowd outgrew the building of the New Park Street Chapel, the church began construction on a new building. That would be named the Metropolitan Tabernacle that is famous. But even before the new building was complete, something had to be done to provide seating for the thousands of people who were coming weekly to hear Spurgeon preach. So the church rented the largest indoor venue in London, the 10,000-seat Survey Gardens at the Music Hall. But on October 19th, 1856, Spurgeon's first Sunday sermon at the Music Hall, the building was filled to standing room only capacity. As Spurgeon began his message, a prankster called out, "Fire." It says a pandemonium ensued. The panicked, overpacked crowd ran over one another in their haste to try to escape the imaginary fire. It says 28 people were seriously wounded and 7 were trampled to death. The experience broke Spurgeon for days. He remained in a state of shocked grief. His wife, Susanna, they had been married for only 10 months. Remember, he is a younger preacher at this time. She wrote, "My beloved's anguish was so deep and violent that reason seemed to totter on her throne, and we sometimes feared that he would never, ever preach again." But Spurgeon did preach again. 2 weeks after the tragedy, he returned to Surrey Hall and spoke to his congregation of God's sustaining grace. And Spurgeon would need the grace for himself. For after the incident, he endured recurring seasons of depression. These were at times so severe and so intense that he wrote, "I could say with Job, my soul chooseth strangling rather than life," as it says in Job 7:15. He said, "I could readily enough have laid violent hands upon myself to escape from a misery of spirit." There were additional factors that piled upon throughout his life, Spurgeon's life, that surely contributed to these battles of depression. It talks about how he lived in constant pain from gout and rheumatism, neuritis, and kidney disease beset him at a young age of 33. Susanna also battled poor health and was bedridden much of the time. In Spurgeon's fervency for the Lord, he carried a tremendous load of stress and had a tendency to overwork himself. The obviousness of his ministry, fruitfulness, invited public criticism. And after the final several years of his life included a necessary stand for Bible doctrine that cost him many friends. Spurgeon didn't hide his seasons of depression. In fact, he publicly shared them as he preached encouragement to others. But depression was not the defining attribute of his life. During his ministry, he was primarily known as a preacher, pastor, and author. He was known as being jovial, optimistic in his personality, and was often full of the joy of the Lord. Today, when most Christians hear the name of Charles Spurgeon, they think of the volumes of printed sermons, the library of written works, often the quotes that their pastors will use during services. They remember his powerful gospel preaching under which tens of thousands of people came to know Christ. They share his many notable, quotable statements and remember him as a strength in the faith for what he was. So why do we share that? Why do we talk about that? Well, you think about it, Spurgeon, if he dealt with all those things, and he did not let that define him. If I asked in the room how many people knew that Charles Spurgeon had dealt with depression throughout his ministry from a younger age all the way till he passed on, I don't know how many people would have raised their hand. I would have known that a little bit, but it's not something that characterized him. It's not something he's known for. If you go to where he passed, where he is buried at, it talks about the grave marker that's there. It talks about how he fought a good fight. He finished his course. Doesn't talk about a man that was depressed, and that doesn't talk about a man who lived with depression. Doesn't talk about a man that let that define him. And I know that sometimes we struggle through things, and I know sometimes it's easy to get discouragement, and even sometimes there's depression that happens in people's lives, but at the same time, don't let it define you. Sometimes you're going through certain things and do not know how to handle them, and you're wondering what's going on, and there is a problem that depression sometimes will cause. There's a feeling of sadness, and sometimes there's a loss of interest and pleasure. Sometimes there's insomnia. Sometimes you're sleeping too much. Sometimes it's tiredness and lack of energy. We could go more and more, and we can even think that there's different degrees of depression. And I don't want to think that I'm trying to be some type of psychiatrist today, but at the same time, I want you to understand that even though you get discouraged at times, and even though you may face bouts of depression, there is some hope. That's the hope we can find in Jesus Christ, the hope that God gives us. Depression comes in different degrees. Sometimes people use the word depressed simply to mean they're feeling a little down. Sometimes they mean it to describe an intense form of the symptoms that are listed that we talked about earlier. Trouble thinking, concentrating, making decisions, always constantly reminding of the past. And it usually generally builds over time and takes time to subside. But there is a path to recovery. There is hope for a believer and a Christian. Some will say, well, does it make me a weak Christian? And I think the answer is there something wrong with me? I think the answer is not always. The thought is that sometimes I've dealt with people that are dealing with struggling with joy, struggling with having the joy of the Lord, struggling with being grateful and being thankful, all those different things. And oftentimes it's something that they have to work with and they have to deal with. And we're going to talk about different things to help us with that. But at the same time, there are the reason why sometimes people have lost their joy is because of sin. That's not an Elijah's case here. You go back and think about some Bible examples of people that that struggle with this. I think about Judas. He committed suicide. Why did Judas commit suicide? It's because he betrayed Christ. That was because of a sin. That was something that was dealt with him. I think about Jonah sitting underneath that tree and miserable and pouting and whatever you want to call it. But he's there because he doesn't want to serve the Lord. He thinks he knows better than God. Those are things that stole away his joy. But then I think about other Bible characters. I think about David, and we read in Psalms 51, and I believe it's Psalms 32, about the depression that he went through because of the sin with Bathsheba. Talk about how it seemed like the breaking of his bones. That was because of sin. But you read those Psalms, there's many high points and there's many low points. There are times when he's overwhelmed and he goes to that rock, he goes to God, and he gets the help he needs, and he's spiritually right. He's just struggling with the things that are happening. I think about the story of Job. Job is someone also who dealt with some depression there. And some, I even think about the story of Moses. And there's different times that even some of those men said, hey, just go ahead and take me. Just go ahead. God, go ahead and take me. Go ahead and get. I'm miserable here. And so I want you to understand that this message may not be for everybody per se, but there's a lot of people in the world that deal with discouragement. There's a lot of people in the world that deal with depression. And I like this story here because it shows us so many different qualities that we can learn, that we can see. We can say, I see why he thinks that way. I can see why he feels that way, but we see how God responds. So if you're keeping an outline, here's one of the first points is the background of Elijah's depression here, the background of Elijah's depression. I'm Sunday school, I know that most of you know a lot about the Bible, so we're gonna think that you know about the story that happened in 1 Kings 18. 1 Kings 18, they had to face off. Remember, there hadn't been rain for 3.5 years. Elijah's there. Elijah makes a challenge there to find out who, to show the people, the nation of Israel, who the one true God is. There's 850 prophets of Baal, and then there's Elijah that's there. And he says, hey, let's see which God can call fire down from heaven. And it talks about how the prophets of Baal went through that day and tried their best for a number of hours to try to call fire down from heaven. It just didn't happen. And then how Elijah rebuilt the altar and how Elijah prayed. And Elijah, what a great story. And we don't have time to re-preach that, but we saw the fire come down from heaven. And we saw this great and wonderful victory. And it says in 1 Kings chapter 18, if you want to look, it talked about how Elijah in verse number 40, Elijah said unto them, take the prophets of Baal, let not one of them escape. And they took them, and Elijah brought them down to the brook Kishon and slew them there. So I want you to kind of put a picture there. Elijah has just had this great victory. Fire has fallen from heaven, and they got the prophets. He says they took him there, and it sounds like, if you read it there, it sounds like Elijah slew them himself. It says in verse 41, and Elijah said unto Ahab, get thee up, eat and drink, for there is a sound of abundance of rain. And so Ahab went to eat and to drink, and Elijah went up to the top of Carmel, and he cast himself down upon the earth, and he put his face between his knees, and he begins to pray. And then obviously It comes, and then we see the story drop down to verse 44. It came to pass at the seventh time that he said, "Behold, there ariseth a little cloud of the sea like a man's hand." And he said, "Go up, say unto Ahab, prepare thy chariot and get thee down, and the rain stop thee not." And it says, "Wow, it came to pass in the meanwhile that the heaven was black and the clouds and the wind, and there was a great rain. And Ahab robed and went to Jezreel." Look what it says in verse 46. "And the hand of the Lord was upon Elijah, and he girded up his loins, and he ran before Ahab to the entrance of Jezreel." Now, you think about that. It's raining, and this guy's running. You think about how much physical strength and the spiritual battle that would have happened on Mount Carmel, how that would have drained him. It comes to the point that he comes down and he helps, if not slays all the prophets of Baal, he does it by himself, or even if he had helped, the physical strength that's there. And then the once again, the spiritual battle on the top of the mountain, praying and casting himself down, goes going back, says, "Go back, check seven different times." And then it says that he runs and he gets there before even the chariot gets there. This guy's got to be worn out. And you say, why would he do this? Different people think different reasons. I really think that Elijah thought revival was coming. This was it. Everything got right. You know, even Jezebel's going to get right. He's at that door waiting, expecting, because God manifested himself. He saw how the people responded, all those different things. But it says in verse number one, this is the background. This is what causes the depression. "And Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done," chapter 19, verse number 1, 1 Kings, "had done with all he had slain all the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a messenger unto Elijah, saying, 'So let the gods do to me, and more also, if I make not thy life as the life of one of them, as the life of one of them by tomorrow about this time.' And when he saw that, he arose and went for his life and came to Beersheba, which belongeth to Judah, and left his servant there. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a juniper tree, and he requested for himself that he might die, and said, 'It is enough now, O Lord, take away my life, for I am not better than my fathers.'" Let's have a word of prayer and ask God to help us this morning. Dear Heavenly Father, Lord, I know in our short time here, there's so much we want to try to cover, but help us to see and understand that we can trust in you, that you're capable of all things, and Lord, that you do all things well. And God, as we think about what Elijah's going through here, it's not turning out the way he expected. This is causing him to, instead of keeping his eyes focused on you, he begins to look on his circumstances. And as he begins to look on his circumstances, he becomes discouraged to the point where he's saying, "Lord, just go ahead and take my life. It's not worth for me to live anymore." Lord, would you help us today? Help us to see that this world will treat us miserably sometimes. That even people that say they believe in God sometimes will treat us miserably. But God, that we would stay focused on you, that we would not let the things of this world discourage us or to depress us. But instead, as we see in Elijah's story, you have a plan for him. You have a purpose for him. You want him to keep on going. And Lord, thank you for the rest that we're able to find in you. And even though the things of this world can become very discouraging, help us to look and keep our eyes focused on you. And Lord, help us to see the truth that's found is that we have hope in you. Thank you for loving us. In Jesus' name, amen. So discouragement is a tool that the devil uses. It's a tool that Satan uses. There's many times where we have seen people get discouraged about something that's happened, and he attacks. And that's why Peter says, be sober, be vigilant. We need to be vigilant about these things. We need to guard against these things. We need to understand not to let the things of this world discourage and depress us, but see God sitting on the throne. There is discouragement is a tool that Satan does, and Satan doesn't play fair. If you think about it, it's a time that he's vulnerable. And we don't have time to re-preach all the reason why we think that Elijah is discouraged, but things didn't turn out the way he thought they should. You imagine, 850 prophets of Baal, he had just conquered that. God just allowed fire to come down from heaven. He just won this great battle, and he runs because of one woman. One woman threatens him. That discourages him so much, it says that he goes out and he takes a dangerous path. So if you had a second point, the background of the Elijah's depression, the discouragement is the tool of Satan. We must make sure, remember where that discouragement comes from. It comes from Satan. Remember, the Bible talks about how God hasn't given us a spirit of fear. And we've already looked at the idea that there's sometimes godly people have experienced depression or dealing with discouragement. But look at the dangerous path that he takes here. Even though he is dealing with depression, it's not always caused by sin, but look how he responds. It says, first of all, he isolates. Look what it says at the end of verse number three. And when he saw that, he arose and went for his life and came to Beersheba, which belongeth to Judah, and left his servant there. One of the things we must remember is that how God's created us for fellowship. And sometimes if we want to be discouraged, if we want to be depressed, we don't want to talk to anybody. We don't want to let anybody encourage us. We don't let anybody try to help us with our joy. He takes his servant and he says, hey, I want you to stay here. Why would he tell a servant to stay there? Is he isolating so that way he can go spend some time with God? See, there's a difference between solitude and isolation. The difference between solitude means that I'm going to take some time and I'm going to go apart for a little while. I'm going to get close to God and I want to quiet out all the things that are happening in life. But if you think about isolation means I'm going to go over here and it's a mental thing. Solitude is more of a physical thing that you're quieting all the voices. Isolation means it's, in a sense, it is a more of a mental thing that is talking about it's an emotional condition. I want to be isolated. When a person goes to get solitude, and sometimes I'll go away for a day, sometimes even for 4 or 5 days, and I'll go, and the only thing I want is myself, and I want to hear from the Lord. I catch up on reading, catch up on studying, sometimes lay out a list of preaching and things like that. Those, it's important times. It's a lot of hard work. Some people say, oh, that's lazy, that's vacation. It is spiritual, and it is hard work and trying to stay focused and all those other things, but that's a solitude there. I don't want to be by myself. I want God to speak to my heart. I'm spending time with him. Isolation is an emotional thing that you're saying, I want to shut everybody else out because I don't want anyone else to be able to encourage me. I want to feel sorry for myself or they won't understand. And I'm not picking on it, but at the same time, God's designed us to encourage one another. That's why the Bible tells us not to forsake the assembly of believers. And that's why he tells us to encourage one another. When Jesus withdrew in the wilderness and prayed, that's one thing. But when the Bible talks about to encourage one another unto good works, that's what he's talking about here. Elijah leaves this man here and he goes off by himself. Not only does he go off by himself and he's in isolation, this is a dangerous pathway because he isolates himself and then he despairs. He begins to worry. He begins to become discouraged. He comes despaired about things that are not really true. Look what it says in verse number 4. He says, but he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat underneath a juniper tree, and he requested for himself that he might die and said, it is enough. Now, O Lord, take away my life, for I'm not better than my father's. So he's in despair. He gives up hope. He says he's not better than his father's. He's not basing this on reality. Instead, he's basing it off of how he feels. You think about it, what he had just accomplished and what he had just done, God had just used, was something that was miraculous. We think he could live off of that for how long? But no, instead, he's like, no, I'm not better than my father's. And when we're tempted to despair in life, the Bible says, there have no temptation that taking you, but such is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above all that you're able, but with temptation also will make a way escape that you may be able to bear it. He's saying, don't be despair. Don't say, hey, I'm not better than them. You should just take me out and don't worry about it. We all have a plan and purpose. And the next thing I want to think about is the desolation that's there, the desolation. He takes his eyes off of God. And look what it says in verse number 5. It says, and he lay and slept under a juniper tree. Behold, then the angel of the Lord touched him and said unto him, arise and eat. And he looked, and behold, there was a cake broken, bacon on the coals, and a cruse of water at his head. And he did eat and drink and laid him down again. And the angel of the Lord came again the second time and touched him and said, arise and eat, because the journey is too great for thee. And he arose and did eat and drink and went in the strength of the meat 40 days and 40 nights unto Horeb, the mount of God. And he came thither unto a cave and lodged there. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him, and he said unto him, what doest thou here, Elijah? And he said, I have been very jealous for the Lord God of the hosts, for the children of Israel have forsaken thy covenant, thrown down thy altars, and slain thy prophets with the sword. And I, even I, am left, and they seek my life to take it away. Now, here in verse number 10, this is where I say the desolation thing happens. He's there. It feels like nothing's ever good going to happen. Everything's bad. He says that there's nobody else there serving him. You go on later on. We don't forsake a time. And God tells him, look, there's 7,000 that haven't bowed the knee. There's 7,000 that still serve. We even think about the prophet, the guy who had hid the prophets. There was 100 prophets sitting out in the cave. Elijah knew that. Elijah was feeling sorry for himself, and he came to this point that he wasn't living in reality. Instead, he allows this deception become discouragement, and this discouragement become despair, and this despair become desolation. Nothing's ever going to get good anymore. You might as well just go ahead and get rid of me and kill me. If he was the only prophet, why in the world would he want to leave then? If he was the only prophet, don't you think he says, well, if I'm the only prophet, I need to get to work? But no, instead he's discouraged. Things didn't turn out the way he thought they should. Instead he's saying, these are the things that should have happened. Ahab should have gotten right. Jezebel should have gotten right. This country should have had a great revival. And he was looking forward to that. And because he was disappointed in what happened, he becomes discouraged. And sometimes in our life, we allow what we think should happen discourages us to the point that we become depressed. And we get to the point in saying, nothing's ever going to change. Nothing will ever get any better. Everything is miserable. Everything is wrong. Everything is bad. And that's where the desolation comes from. It drove Elijah's desire for isolation, a sense of despair, gets him thinking, hey, I'm the only one that's here serving. I'm here alone. But we know that's not true. So how do we get to that spot? So oftentimes when we take a self look and look inside and say, woe is me, I'm the only one serving. I'm the only one that's doing that. We say no one understands how I feel. No one understands. No one else works as hard as I do. No one appreciates me. No one has it as bad as I do. I'm the only one who's making a difference. I'm the only one that's carrying all this weight. And what we do is we take our eyes off of God and we begin to put it on ourselves. It's easy to do. It's easy to become overwhelmed. It's easy to become depressed. It's easy to get discouraged when we look at the things around the world. But if Elijah would have just taken some time and said, you know what? God is good. God just allowed this miraculous thing to happen. And maybe Ahab and Jezebel didn't get it. But you know what? There is a group of people that saw that. Let's go out and let's see what God has me to do now. But no one said, he's like, I'm the only one that's there. I was one versus 850. And, you know, the guy said there was 100 people that were still in the caves, and there was 7,000 that hadn't bowed their knee. There was profitable things that were happening, but Elijah couldn't see it because he was so focused on him and himself. And I want you to understand that God is not dead. God is alive, and there is always hope. Story talked about how Martin Luther one time fell into deep depression. And it says that one day his wife, and his wife's name was Kitty, and was dressed up in mourning clothes. Luther comes downstairs for breakfast, and he asks her, he says, who's died? Like he didn't realize somebody died. And the wife said, God died. Luther objected and said, God can't die. And his wife says, well, from the way you're acting, I thought he had. And God hasn't died. He won't leave us alone. He's promised us he's never going to leave us. He's promised he's never going to forsake us. And there is an overcoming path. We see isolation sometimes allow despair to set in, and despair allows desolation to set in. And we take our eyes off of God and we begin putting it on how bad things are. And believe me, it is easy to become depressed. It is easy to become discouraged when you look around. But when you see God sitting on the throne, realizing God is in control and that God does all things well and that he doesn't make mistakes and that he can take anything and he can work it together for good, we become encouraged. So how does God treat Elijah? Does God smack Elijah around and say to Elijah, what are you doing here? And he says, you should get up and do some work. Not really. Instead, he treats him with the touch of God. If you go to verse number 5, it says, and as he lay and slept under a juniper tree, behold, the angel touched him and said unto him, arise and eat. He doesn't begin. You see the tenderness. You know, once again, he's already gone through dealing with the 3.5 years, no rain, everybody hating him. He's already gone through Ahab accusing him. He's gone through the battle on Mount Carmel. He's gone through slaying the Baal prophets. He's gone through running to the to the temple or running to the palace. He's gone to all these different things. He comes up to this spot emotionally, and he is just so worn out and so dead tired. He says, God, forget it. It's not worth it. I'm all done. Just go ahead and take me. I'm not better than anyone else. And he had to learn that it wasn't about him. It was about what God was doing. And as he laid underneath that juniper tree, you see how he touches him. Perhaps the most encouraging aspect of Elijah's story is how God responded to his despair. God didn't cast him off. God didn't abandon him. God didn't leave him underneath that juniper tree. God didn't listen to him and just take his life. Instead, you see the tenderness, how he cares for him. He says, as he lay and slept under the juniper tree, behold, then an angel touched him and said unto him, arise and eat. And he looked, and behold, there was a cake baking and the coals and a cruse of the water at his head. And he did eat and drink and laid him down again. And then you see the next phrase, and the angel of the Lord came again the second time and touched him and said, arise and eat, behold, because the journey is too great for thee. I love that thought. Elijah, this journey is too great for you. You're not going to do it. You're not going to do it on your own. And so what does he do? He arises again, he eats. And he says that for 40 days he stays in the strength of that meal. God ministers to us when we're low as well. He touches us, maybe not like with the angel of the Lord, but he touches us and he works in our heart. He works in our life if we'll give him the opportunity. So here's some things to remember of the overcoming path. Remember the touch of God. Remember how God is working for us. We see the physical provision there. We also see the spiritual provision that's found in verse number 11. And he go forth and stand in the mountain before the Lord. And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind rent the mountains and break in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. And the Lord was not in the fire. But look at this. And after the fire, a still small voice. Elijah had heard that voice. Elijah had allowed God to lead him from one spot to another spot. Think about it, to the brook, to the widow's house, to where Ahab was, to Mount Carmel. But God didn't lead him to the juniper tree. God did not tell him to go to that juniper tree. If he would have kept on listening to the, I wonder what would have happened if Elijah would have stood there up against Jezebel. I wonder what would have happened if Elijah, instead of running, would have made a stand there. Say good time, we had to keep on going. So how do we overcome? One of the things I want you to make sure is, I know this is when we, you might say, well, Pastor, this is really Bible. Take care of yourself. Get the rest that you need. Get the nourishment that you need. God does that. He takes care of himself with the rest and the nourishment. And sometimes when people deal with depression, they don't get the rest they need. They don't get the nourishment they need. Physically, take care of yourself. But also the next thing is refuse to dwell on negative or untrue thoughts. Refuse to dwell on negative or untrue thoughts. Negative or untrue thoughts. Refuse to. Don't believe it. Think about what the Bible tells us to think about. He tells us in Philippians 4:8, what does he tell us to dwell on? He says, finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things. This is what we should focus on. What is Elijah focusing on? He's sitting underneath the juniper tree, and the first thing he tells God is, God, I'm the only one serving you. It's just me. I'm not better than my fathers. That's what he's thinking about. That's not just popping into his mind as he's running, as he's telling this man, his servant, hey, I want you to stay over here. I don't want you to come. You stay here. What is he doing? He's saying, this is what he's thinking about. This is what he's considering. This is what's building up. This is the lie that the devil is telling. He knows there's 100 men, prophets sitting in the cave. God tells him a little while later, there's 7,000 that haven't bowed the knee. He has just won this great battle on the top of this mountain, and he could be thinking about that. He could be encouraged by that, but instead he's allowed this despair become to a desolation that's saying, I can't make a difference, when God just used him to make a huge difference. So refuse to dwell on negative, untrue thoughts, because what we think in our heart, that's what we're going to become. And it's out of our heart all the wicked things come. We got to keep on going. Refocus on the Lord by spending time in his word. Refocus on the Lord by spending time in his word. Psalms 119, 81 and 82 talks about, even when your depression does not lift you as you read the scriptures, it talks about that. Let's go ahead and take our Bible real quick there. I thought I had it written in my notes, but it's not. Psalms 119, 81, and 82. I didn't want to misquote it. My soul fainteth for thy salvation, but I hope in thy word. Mine eyes fail for thy word, saying, when will thou comfort me? He's saying, my soul is fainting for thy salvation, but I hope in thy word. This is where we find our hope at. If we are willing to refocus on the Lord, refocus by spending time with him, refocus by thinking about what God is doing, submit to God's will, seek his direction. If you go back and you read through the story two different times, at the end of verse number 9, it said, what doest thou here, Elijah? God comes to Elijah and says, what are you doing here? Why are you sitting here? Why are you in this cave? I didn't lead you here. I didn't direct you here. And sometimes I think when a person is dealing with discouragement, they're allowing these bad things to happen, and they're sitting there, God comes and speaks to their heart and says, why are you sitting here like this? What has caused you to get here? Why are you depressed? Why are you discouraged? And once again, I'm not picking, because I know sometimes things are hard and sometimes things are tough and we lose loved ones and we see all the things that are happening. But God tells us to depend upon him, trust in his word, spend time in his word, submit to God's will, seek his leadership. And that's what Elijah's problem wasn't the fact that Jezebel did not respond, because Jezebel wasn't going to respond. Elijah's problem was he didn't say, God, what is it you want me to do now? And when he got that note, when he got that word that Jezebel says, by tomorrow, you're gone. God had already provided for him for this 3.5 years. They were looking for him for 3.5 years because of no rain. He had protected his life. He protected his life at the Mount Carmel. He had protected his life all this time, fed him with ravens. He forgot the goodness of God. He forgot how God had taken care of one woman. Once again, I think it wasn't the fact that he was so afraid. And Jezebel's threat was definitely, you know, she had just killed the guy about the grapevine and things like that. It was real, but it was just as real as any of the other threats. What happened? Things didn't turn out the way he thought they should have. He was really thinking that revival was coming. In my mind, why was he so disappointed? It's because things didn't change like he thought they should have. And I tell you, sometimes when we look at this world, we're thinking, oh no, because I said something, revival should break out. Because I started living for God, everything should change now. But the reality is, we must seek God's will and seek his direction for our lives. It's not, we cannot trust that other people are going to allow things to happen to make us feel like we have accomplished something for God. What we accomplish something for God is when we live for God, when we do what his will is and what he desires for us to do. And here, this man, Elijah, had done everything God wanted him to do. He was God's chosen servant. But underneath that juniper tree, he got to the point in saying, things did not turn out the way I thought they should. I'm no better than my fathers. Just go ahead and take me. It's because of the fact he was living according to his plan instead of God's plan. Engage in serving the Lord and others. Last but not least, engage in serving the Lord and others. And so what's the end of the story? Is Elijah done here? No. There's a chapter 19. And there's a chapter 20. There's a chapter 21. And God gives him a job to do. He begins to be the guy who's going to mentor Elisha. He begins to anoint the two kings, and God still uses him after this. He has a plan and a purpose. And sometimes when we get discouraged, we think that no, God's not going to use me anymore. I'm done. I'm focused. I should just go somewhere and isolate myself away from everybody else. And I should just turn around and just feel like, hey, God's done with me. How could Elijah feel that way? But sometimes when I talk to people, there's a discouragement there. There's a depression that sets in. And I know sometimes there's mental health issues. I'm not minimizing any of those things. I'm looking at the story here, how the Lord took care of Elijah. He treated him with kindness. He took care of his physical needs. He spoke to him spiritually, and he had a plan and purpose for him. Engage in serving the Lord. Don't allow yourself to stay on the negative thoughts. Don't allow the soft stuff to stay on the untrue thoughts. He was not the only one serving. He was not the only hope for Israel. I think that's what he really thought. I'm not better than my fathers. If this doesn't happen right now the way I think it should, everything's done. No, that's not the case. There's still a 1 Kings 20, 21. There's still a 2 Kings. There's still Jesus coming and dying on the cross. It's not about us. It's about us being faithful and serving and just saying, okay, Jezebel didn't repent. God, what is it you want me to do now? But when we get discouraged and despair and we sit underneath that juniper tree, you know what's happening? There is a number of people sitting in Israel that just watched fire come down from heaven. Who's talking to them? Who is the one that's leading them to God? Who is the one saying, hey, the prophets of Baal are not true? Elijah, once again, is over somewhere else sitting underneath the juniper tree when he had the opportunity to be able to minister and mentor and do work with these people. And you say, well, you don't know if God wanted him to. I don't know that. Neither does Elijah. Why is that? Because Elijah did not pursue asking God, what is it you want me to do? Like I said, discouragement, depression, it happens. Spurgeon, Amy Carmichael, you read some of the biographies of some of the people, they had a hard time getting to the joy of the Lord, but they didn't let them define it. You wouldn't know it unless you heard a preacher give an illustration. You wouldn't know it unless you read a biography. You wouldn't have known those things because it didn't let him define it. And here in Elijah, he was trying to let that one moment define him. That's not God's plan and purpose. It's not just one moment. He doesn't want you dwelling on untrue thoughts. He wants you to engage in serving him. Don't let your discouragement define you. Don't let being miserable define you. The joy of the Lord is our strength. And as I said, Spurgeon was one who would talk about it often. I don't know if I would talk about it, but he's someone who talked about it, and he's someone he preached about it. He tried to encourage others with it because he knew that people face that. Now, I want you to see that Elijah was used by God later on when he stopped looking at himself and realized God had a plan and purpose for his life. Let's go ahead and have a word of prayer.